Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Krista Mayer, attorney registration number 42140. I'm here from the attorney general's office on behalf of the CDLE Division of Unemployment Insurance. This is a case about a company that recruits talent to represent its interests with its client, with its clients, and to build its brand as a talent agency. The Industrial Plant Appeals Panel incorrectly decided that the talent did not provide services to the company, and that order should be set aside and remanded for two reasons. First, the talent provided services to Marvel's Kids under Section 870.115 and Weld County Kirby because their performances provided a direct monetary benefit to the company and also built the company's brand as a talent agency. And second, the panel did not consider on-point Colorado case law to reach its determination, but instead relied on two unhelpful cases to reach a conclusion that was inconsistent with Colorado law. This court does not have to decide whether the models and actors were employees of Marvel's Kids. It only has to decide whether, in this case, the models and actors provided services to Marvel's Kids under Colorado law. Section 870.115.1b provides that service performed by an individual for another shall be deemed to be employment unless the employer can demonstrate that the individual is free from the direction and control of the putative employer and the individual is customarily engaged in an independent trade or business. The statute does not define the phrase service performed by an individual for another. But in the Weld County Kirby case, the division of this court determined that the term service means an act done for the benefit or at the command of another. The Weld County Kirby definition is appropriately broad because this is a threshold issue. Here, the service provided by the models and actors to Marvel's Kids was twofold. First, Marvel's Kids took a 20% fee from the gross income earned by the talent for their modeling and acting jobs. And those fees made up the bulk of Marvel's Kids' business income. Second, the models and actors were representatives of Marvel's Kids, and Marvel's Kids expected them to sell its brand as a talent agency, which would in turn build its reputation with current and prospective clients.
When you say sell its brand, does that mean just doing a good job so that the companies would want to use the Marvel Kids again, or are you talking about some other sorts of activities?
I think it's that and more. I think that the owner of Marvel's Kids testified at the hearing that Marvel's Kids looks for a particular look based on what the clients want and the evolving industry of advertising and performance. She testified that the look that her clients seek has evolved and that there's higher demand now for actors and models from different ethnic backgrounds, for example. They also train their models and actors, particularly the child models and actors, and require them to attend, I believe it's five sessions of training in things like video performance, voiceover,
I guess the difficulty I'm having with that argument is certainly that Marvel Kids wants to have a good product, mm-hmm. so to speak, but do, other than being a good product, do the child actors have to do anything to promote the company?
No, I don't. I think the key is in how they present as the company's product. And I think it's also telling that Marvel's Kids recruits talent by putting out articles, basically highlighting how well these child models and actors have done and how they've developed life skills and have received a number of benefits from being part of Marvel's Kids. And Marvel's Kids also recruits talent by posting ads on Craigslist, for example.
Doesn't this case look like a prism, depending upon which angle you're looking at, who's providing services for whom? You know, your position is, gee, looks like Marvel Kids are providing services or, no, the actors are providing services for Marvel Kids. Is there another way to look around and say, gee, it looks like Marvel Services are providing services for the actors? Could the actors be separately assessed an unemployment tax or fee?
No, I don't think so. And again, it is the threshold issue of whether they're providing a service rather than the ultimate issue of whether the talent are employees. But I definitely see your point. I think that, you know, and opposing counsel raised a couple of hypotheticals in the brief, in the answer brief. And I think some of the cases that we looked at, that I cited in our brief, talk about that issue and how to analyze that issue. I think it's a fact-sensitive issue because of the fact that, you know, I'll put it this way. I don't think that just because one person provides a monetary benefit to another, that that means that they are providing a service. I think that you have to look at the amount of direction and control in the relationship. Where does the majority of the direction and control lie? In this case, it lies with Marvel's Kids.
Well, doesn't the direction and control really go to whether they're an employee or not, instead of whether they're providing a benefit? Because it seems like the argument is leaking over. My perception is that your first threshold argument is based solely on the pay structure. And I guess I have some concerns about that. For example, what if the kids just paid a monthly flat fee to Marvel Kids to be promoted as actors? Then they wouldn't be providing a service in your eyes under that scenario, would they?
I mean, again, I think it depends. I think to answer your first observation that the analysis here seems to be leaking over into the soft rock area where we go into deciding whether the presumption can be rebutted. I think that it's appropriate for the analysis that we use in deciding whether the presumption can be rebutted, that analysis might have some bearing on whether the presumption exists in the first place.
Well, here the kids, the children don't really, the company doesn't really control how much money they get from each individual advertising client, right? Isn't that something that's negotiated between the child actors and the company?
No, I don't think that's negotiated between the child actors and the company. I think that
but there's no set fee, right? It's like all of our actors will work, you know, 10-hour day for $500. Don't they have a more variable fee arrangement?
I believe that's right. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure that I'm answering your question. I think it's not just about the pay structure. I mean, the pay structure is a factor. The fact that I think it's also, again, just going back to the control and direction, the contract that Marvel's Kids drafted and has its talent sign provides that the actors and models are not permitted to work with any other talent agency within Colorado while they're contracting with Marvel's Kids. So there's an exclusivity element there. Marvel's Kids, all her money goes to Marvel's Kids first. Marvel's Kids, from the clients to Marvel's Kids. Marvel's Kids takes out its own 20% fee and then remits the remainder to the actor or model. And that's another place where Marvel's Kids exercises control. Marvel's Kids, in addition to requiring exclusivity among talent agencies, it also prohibits its models and actors from working directly with the clients and not through Marvel's Kids. So for example, in the contract, which can be found on page 117 of the record, there's a provision that states that if a client is to provide a check directly to one of the models or actors, Marvel's Kids is permitted to endorse that check back to Marvel's Kids and deposit it into its own account, and then take out the amount that is owed for its commission and remit the remainder back to the models and actors. So I think it is like so many of so much of what we discuss when we're talking about CESA cases, it is a multi-factor analysis that we need to use. The panel, unfortunately, looked at two out-of-state cases, Chorlek and Turk. And, you know, I asked myself, why did they look at these cases? I think they were grappling with the issue and perhaps were looking to find some industry-specific guidance. I don't think that's the right way to do it. I think that we need to use an analysis that's consistent with that we can consistently apply using the language of CESA and in a manner that's consistent with the legislative purpose of CESA to analyze this threshold issue. And I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Brian Stukai, registration number 8805. In the appellee's brief, at page 8, we cite to a testimony that came at the hearing before the hearing officer, where I asked the representative of the division what service were the talent providing to Marvel's kids. The representative of the division said they were giving a benefit, a conclusory answer. When pressed for the specifics of what service was being given to Marvel's kids, their agent, the representative didn't have an answer. That appears at in the record at transcript, page 386, lines 18 through 389, line 11. I think that's important because this is, as counsel said, a factual determination. The ICAO made a factual determination that the talent for whom Marvel's kids worked as an agent were actually giving service to the third-party clients. Whomever, Southwest Airlines was mentioned in the hearing, Coors, for whom they served an acting or a modeling role.
Does the ICAO make factual determinations, or does the hearing officer make them subject to review by the ICAO?
The ICAO deals with that in a final order, where they say we are allowed to independently assess whether the findings of the hearing officer as to the evidence meet the standard of whether the hearing officers or findings are contrary to the weight of the evidence. And the ICAO cited Clark v. Colorado State University for that proposition. So the ICAO, I would submit, is entitled to make that determination.
Well, let me ask you this question. If the ICAO determined that benefits were being provided to the companies that ultimately hired the child actors, does that exclude the child actors from also providing a benefit to Marvel's kids under the employment compensation statutes? Can there be two people being provided a benefit, I guess, or two entities?
I guess that's theoretically conceivable, that there two people could be providing a benefit. The way the ICAO dealt with that is to analogize it to employee leasing and employee benefits companies, where the legislature has specifically said if there's a contract in place, because we can't assume that there's dual employment if the only thing you see is a benefit accruing to the person, the manager, that you can have a contract that provides specifically that the manager will also be deemed to be an employer. I should tell the court that in the transcript, there's evidence that quite often, with regard to Judge Bailey's earlier questions, the clients, the third parties, actually withheld taxes before they made payment to Marvel's Kids Talent Agency. So they thought they were the employer. Whether the ICAO has the authority to make factual findings, I think, is important. Because before a person can be deemed in an employment relation, they must be providing services for the putative employer. As counsel admitted, just the fact that the manager can't or accrue some benefit from the services that they're providing to a third party doesn't make them an employee. And that's all we have in the record. We don't have any branding or brand building evidence. In Davison, the Industrial Claims Appeals Office, 843 P3rd 1023, the Supreme Court said, we defer to the agency's determinations of fact. In other words, the Industrial Claims Appeals Office had made determinations of fact, and the Supreme Court said that's entitled to deference, the same as it is here. And the only way in which this decision can be set aside is if there's an abuse of discretion. That's the test under USIM, YUSIMV People, 210 P3rd 458. And as the court knows, abuse of discretion means the finding of the ICAO must be manifestly arbitrary, unreasonable, or unfair.
What happens if there was an erroneous application of law? Is that subject to abuse of discretion standard?
Yes, it certainly is. I believe it is.
Okay, it's not a de novo review as to whether or not there was an erroneous application of the law?
Well, no, because this isn't a question of law. This isn't a question of interpretation of the word service. It's a question of whether the ICAO accurately applied the facts to the Webster's definition of what a service is. So I submit that the court isn't in the business of deciding as a matter of law what service means. That's in Webster. And in the Weld County case that counsel has cited, there's probably 10 different factors that determine in the mind of the ICAO that there was an employment relationship. Benefit was one of those, but there were many others. So in Weld County, there wasn't a de novo review of what does service mean. There was a review of the underlying contract between the wholesaler of the vacuums in that case and his salespeople.
Counsel, can I ask you a question about whether you think the degree of control that Marbles exercised over the models is relevant to whether there was employment?
No, I do not. And I think that's a mistake that the hearing officer made. The law used to be that there were two elements that let me step back. Before they can even consider that, there must be a finding, as I cited SCL Inc. versus Industrial Claim Appeals Office. Before there can be a presumption of an employment relationship, an individual must be providing services for the putative employer. And it's only when there's a presumed employment relationship that you get into questions of control and who's an independent operator. And that's the point we tried to make to the hearing officer, was that first step was never reached. They weren't providing services. In fact, Marbles Kids was giving services to its talent.
Counsel, opposing counsel cites this case from Oregon, Gross versus Employment Department. Why isn't the reasoning of that case applicable to the present situation?
Right, let me deal with that, Your Honor. I have a note about it. In the Gross case, here are the facts. The employer was in total control of the technicians.
So again, control is important, although I thought you just told Judge Navarro control is not important.
No. It set the fees, that set the guidelines for performance, and those fees were payable to the employer. That's different. So there was a direct service being provided. So it's not so much control as to whom was the service being provided. It was provided for Rose by the technicians. And yes, there's an element then of who's in control of that.
What was the service that was being provided in Gross?
They were performing some kind of, as I recall, cleaning or something like that. I honestly don't remember. In this instance, there are no, by contrast, facts that show services being provided as admitted, other than benefit was received. The contract, page 117 of the record, says, in fact, over and over again, that Marvel's Kids is providing a service for its talent. It's training its talent so that they can find jobs. It's helping the talent to find the jobs. It's taking a commission, the contract says. It's not paying the talent for their services to it. It's taking a commission, a share of the talent's earnings, as a fee for the services it's provided to the talent. So that's it. In fact, to address Judge Boris's earlier question, I think the facts show that this isn't a dual relationship. In fact, contractually, and the talent all signed these contracts, Marvel's Kids was the employee of the talent. You could argue more so than vice versa.
What's the effect of the exclusivity provision in the contracts between Marvel Kids and the actors?
That was simply, according to the ICO, a protection to Marvel's Kids so that its fees got paid. Nothing more than that. And I'll reserve my comment. Thank you.
Sir, you don't have any more. Excuse me. Stop the clock. Yeah, no. You have 4 minutes to use right now. There's not a sir rebuttal.
I understood. I think I'm finished, unless there are more questions.
Okay, thank you, Counselor.
Thank you.
So I'd like to point out that, as far as the big picture of this analysis, more and more we're moving into a sharing economy, where we're going to see more untraditional employment relationships. And it's important that we develop an analysis that is consistent with the legislative purpose of CESA, while still providing enough flexibility to allow consideration of the unique circumstances of each relationship. I'd like to address just briefly the standard of review. It is a de novo standard of review because it's a matter of statutory construction, and that is consistent with section 874.107, subsection 6, as well as Davison. Now, as far as the service provided, I want to turn back to Weld County Kirby. In Weld County Kirby, the employment relationship was between dealers or sellers of Kirby vacuum cleaners and a distributorship called Well Kirby. The dealers bought vacuum cleaners from the distributorship and then went out and sold them to individual customers. The court there explained that the court didn't just look at the monetary benefit provided to Kirby, to Weld County Kirby by these dealers. It also looked at their contractual relationship. It noted that there was, that the dealers had to, or could only work, could only sell Kirby vacuum cleaners that they purchased from the Weld Kirby distributor. They could only use the Kirby trademark in the name of Weld Kirby for the distributorship. So the court didn't just look at the monetary benefit. The court defined service to mean an act done for the benefit or at the command of another, but it didn't only look at the monetary benefit being provided. And I think that here, like in Weld Kirby, you can look at the contract and you can look at the specific facts of the relationship between these models and actors and the talent agency, and you can see that Marvel's Kids was in charge of this relationship, and it was in charge of creating a relationship where the kids would go out and earn money to bring back to Marvel's Kids.
So if it's just a monetary benefit, that's not enough?
Again, I think you have to look at...
Well, I understand you want us to look at the facts of this case, but I'm asking if all there is a monetary benefit, in your view, is that enough or not enough?
I think that's not enough. I think if it's just a monetary benefit, then you do start getting into the problem of what's the difference between a monetary benefit provided by somebody going into a store and making a purchase and a monetary benefit provided.
Right, or the actors could just be paying a flat fee to have their resumes shopped around for jobs. That'd be just providing a monetary benefit, right?
Probably. I mean, again, I hesitate, you know, but yeah, I mean, I think that just a simple monetary benefit on its own doesn't answer the question. I think that, and that's why I think, Weld Kirby did appropriately set this analysis broadly because it is a threshold issue. And I also think that because we were talking about the start of the analysis, the creation of the presumption, that there are going to be some factors that we look at in whether the presumption is rebutted, some of those factors also play into whether the presumption is created in the first place. And with that, I would like to request to ask the court to set aside the panel's order and remand it with direction. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments in this matter. The case will stand submitted and the opinion will issue in due course. For that, we've concluded this morning's business before the court. The court will be in recess, subject to call, and the bailiff will so announce.